Welcome, Gunslingers, to another episode of Narrative Gunslingers, where we talk about creators. Oh. And their lives, and narratives, and power. Greg, to you.
Oh my gosh, Travis, start over again.
No, leave it in.
Oh my gosh, okay.
Do it live!
As always, your hosts are Travis Webb and myself, Greg Smith.
Today's guest is Chris Jerome. Did I say it right?
You did. I was hoping you would mess it up, though.
No, he messed up the beginning of the whole podcast. He did a special one just for you.
Yep, good.
That today. Yeah. All right, Chris, tell us who you are and what you're about.
All right. Well, my name is Chris Jerome again. I am a comic writer and author. I write a series of fantasy novels, and I'm currently working on a big horror comic series that's successfully funded on Kickstarter a couple times at this point. So, I guess you could just call me a writer. All encompassing.
We know that feeling, both of us do.
Yes,
we do.
All right. So your profession is a writer. How did you get started as a writer?
So I've been, in one capacity or another, I've been a writer pretty much as far back as I can remember. When I was a kid, I used to, my grandfather was blind, and so he had tape recorders, and I used to record stories that I would make up on the fly, and then my grandma would type them out for me before I could write myself. And then I ended up writing from there. I did my own comics back then, all kinds of fun stuff. But I kind of fell out of that until college. And when I was going to school at Oregon State, I actually had a class where we had to write a novel in 3 weeks. And that was the first draft of my first novel, Wrath of the Fallen, came out of that class. I reworked it and kicked it around for a while after that and got it to a place where I was happy sharing it with everybody else besides just my professor. But that's when I, writing that book is when I was like, this is what I want to do.
Nice. Tell us a little bit more of Wrath of the Fallen. What is this Wrath of the Fallen? So if the listeners are interested in this, is this something that they can get?
Absolutely. So it's the first book in a trilogy. I've released two volumes. The second book's called Cries of the Forsaken. The whole series is called The Gods and Men Cycle. So it's an epic fantasy series about this plane of existence that was created to give mortals the choice between good and evil. And we follow the mortals, we follow the gods, their enemies. And it takes place over thousands of years as there's all these different conflicts between the factions of light and darkness. Basically all so that humanity can have a decision and actually can choose to be good instead of just being good because there's no evil at all. You can purchase them all on Amazon. I've got links to them on my website that I'm sure we'll bring up at some point. Right now, nope. Like I said, there's two novels. Yeah, no, not at all. Actually, all of those will be bleeped out, redacted. Two novels. I'm working on the third. There's quite a bit of short fiction. So there's some novellas, a couple novelettes and short stories because I love a good short story as well. And a graphic novel, all set in that universe. And so I've got quite a few plans with that world. It's gonna keep going for quite a while. One of my fan favorite characters, Ren, she's like this angelic figure that's the leader of humanity during the novels, is so popular with my friend group that reads my books that I'm pretty much was required to play her during our new campaign of D&D that starts next week. So I'll be playing around with that, which will kind of help me flesh out the character as she moves forward and grows in importance as the series goes on. So yeah, a lot coming on that down the line.
I have to ask, is this D&D campaign that you're doing, are you recording it? Is this something that people can listen to?
No, we've talked about it. jokingly, they're all huge Critical Role fans. So that's something we've joked about. I don't think anyone's comfortable doing that. I mean, I would be. I think it would be funny because I think our D&D campaigns are hilarious, but not yet. Maybe someday I'll talk them into that.
I would totally listen to you play a campaign because just being your friend and talking to you on other shows, just hearing you in a character doing a campaign would just be great. I think I would subscribe. I would be there.
That's awesome. Yeah, this one will be different. This is the first time that I've played a female character. So we'll see. I don't know if I'm going to do a falsetto voice or anything for it the whole time, but we'll cross that bridge when we get there. I gotta kind of be in the moment, I guess.
Yeah, fair enough.
That just reminds me of IT Crowd.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, that was for our listeners, that scene with the scene where they were playing D&D with a couple of big corporate heads, leadership members, and Ross takes on a female character and helps what's his name through a breakup by making the female character I almost died from both stress and laughter at the same time.
That's like some of the best kind of humor, when you're like cringing and feel like you want to close your eyes and crawl into your body and just like hide from what's happening on screen, but you're laughing at the same time.
It's like
I love it. Life, oh yeah, yeah. That's just Greg's every day.
Every day.
Yeah, that's every time I see you on Facebook, anyway.
Oh my god. True. So, as you were talking, kind of about a little bit about pushing some of these into your current projects and stuff like that. What other stuff do you have going on?
So the other big thing, which is probably becoming the bigger thing, is the comic series that I am doing called Discordia, which is a horror series. My co-creator on that, the artist Patrick Biermeier, is a good friend of mine that I met through Oregon State. He did the Tarnish graphic novel with me that's in the Gods and Men universe, and then we were talking and I had this cool horror idea and I felt like that really fit his artwork, and so we decided to actually create this together. We've done two successful Kickstarters on it. We're, as of this recording, in the middle of a third, which funded in 24 hours. So I got to join. Yeah, thank you. I got to join the very elite club that you guys are in with Starlight, issue two. That 24-hour funding was a huge deal to me. And so I'm very excited about that. So just
ring, dude.
it's awesome. We got to get the jackets too. Discordia is set in a secondary world. I really leaned into my fantasy writer background with heavy world building. I have different countries and cultures. There's these imaginary societies. It is like a full world that I've created. That the horror takes place in. I didn't want it to just be like most horror stories. It's in some version of our world. And I really wanted it to be its own world. It has parallels to 1930s, 1940s Europe. It's set in kind of like this pseudo World War II type conflict and directly after that conflict, but it's very much its own thing. Discordia, we've done issue zero, which was a bunch of shorts that was kind of fleshing out the world. We did a winter special that had two comics in it. One was a full-on one-shot. One was a collection of folklore and nursery rhymes and poems from one country on our continent that had a bunch of guest artists. And then the one that we're running right now is another short that's getting a standalone release for Kickstarter's Make 100 program. And that one is introducing us to the main character of the ongoing story. So when issue one rolls out in a couple months, we're going to follow this character from the Make 100 short. His name's Cole. And he's kind of not a great guy, but that's our protagonist. He's got to be kind of dark to fit the world. And they're going to go on a kind of a twisted odyssey as we travel around the continent of Odessa and run into all kinds of messed up stuff and deal with the horrors of this world after society's pretty much collapsed. So it's really exciting. There's been a lot of great fan feedback to this. I don't know. I came up with the idea when I was like knee deep in reading the story that I'll be talking about later in the podcast and, spoilers. And, it was weird. So I was hanging out with my kiddo, in his room. He was playing and I was just kind of like laying on the floor, trying to take a nap while he was playing. And I was in that like half awake, half asleep state. And it just like, my brain was just running and I just started coming up with the details. And then pretty soon I hit Patrick up and I was like, hey, I've got this idea for this series and it's going to throw together all these different horror elements that the two of us really like. And since then we've had a lot of cool fan feedback. We've got, you know, people that want to get drawn in and lots of people reaching out to us to, when's the next one coming out? And can I join, we're setting up a Discord server and we have a World Anvil account so that all that world building doesn't go to waste and people can actually look through like the wiki articles that I've made to keep it straight for us. Mm-hmm. So
you have a what account?
World Anvil?
World Anvil?
Yes.
Okay, finish what you're saying. We're going to come back to that because I'd like to hear more about that.
Yes, all right, awesome. So it... you know, people will be able to read all these articles that I've written. And I kind of feel like at this point, Discordia is almost eclipsing my fantasy writing. And it just in terms of how popular it is and how many fans I've actually been able to engage with. I don't know. I love them both and I'm never going to like stop writing prose novels. I'm not going to stop my fantasy series. But Discordia is like a whole different passion for me and seems to be like one that a lot of people are drawn to. So that's kind of been my focus for the last year and probably will still take up the majority of my time going forward in the immediate future. Plus comics are just awesome. So
it's literally my favorite medium.
Yeah, I love it because it does, it combines elements from other mediums, at least on the surface, but the way that they all go together, is completely different. Like I've written some screenplays before when I was in college. Obviously I've written some novels, but like writing a comic script is just a different layer of rewarding because you get to have that other artist's input and you get to see your words on the page so much faster. Like, not necessarily faster, because when you're writing a book, obviously you immediately see the words on the screen, but like seeing the panels drawn and seeing the color on there. And then when the letterers gets involved, it's just great to see that synthesis and the interplay of the words and the images. And it's something totally different. And it's a different part of my brain than writing a novel is. And something about writing and coming up with comic ideas is almost more exciting and rewarding for me. I love it.
Greg, you mind if I jump in real quick? I'm going to ask you that.
Jump in.
So, you know, Chris and Greg and I, we've all done screenplays on the side prose and novels and comic books. And I think I was just hearing your words made me think about why do I love writing comic books when I feel like I love movies. And I think because when I write a screenplay, as a writer, you are limited to just getting the narrative on the page. You don't get input on how it is going to be interpreted visually. And in a novel, you're relying interpretation to be to your reader. But in a comic, it's a synthesis between the two. You know, you're both synergizing that interpretation between you and the artist and the letterer and the inker. Honestly, a great inker is worth every bit. And mm-hmm. I think that's probably And I'll just checking with you, Chris, that I think is why there is an attraction to writing comic book for comic book writers that never go into film.
Yeah, I think I completely agree, because I when I was going to college and got back into writing, what I was actually going to school for was I wanted to become a filmmaker. But I didn't know, I mean, like everybody wants to, you know, if you want to go to film school or whatever, which I didn't do. I was going to a state school, but taking video classes and focusing on digital media, everybody wants to be a director, but I didn't want to take somebody else's screenplay and interpret it. I wanted to tell my own stories. You know, I really wanted to be like an auteur, like do all of it. I wanted to do the cinematography. I really enjoyed the editing because I liked watching the finished product come together. The editing was actually my favorite part of the process. But it was just too much and too many different parts and trying to get actors and all these other things. And then when I fell back into writing, that was scratching the itch. And I realized that that's the type of storytelling I wanted to do. And then comics just built on that to where I got that dopamine hit that I got from writing. And I got the same dopamine hit that I got from filmmaking, and I got to put them together, and it's like 10 times better. So, you know, it's awesome.
I totally feel what you just said. Cause I think our educational paths were very similar. In that I did a film class, a production class in which we did a lot of video production and other things like that. But it was all based in creating things, writing things. I really enjoyed the editing as well. And then writing those vignettes and other things to build up into these shorts and these short films or compilations and other things like that. It was fun, but you start putting it together later on in life, and you start making comics, and you're like, this is the thing. Cause you, like you said, you get that dopamine hit. And when you put out something like Discordia and people are chomping at the bit for the next thing, or talking to you about what they like about it, because everything fits together, your words and Patrick's art, definitely hand in glove. And it's just a beautiful thing to see on the page and to flip through this book, that I have in front of me. And it's one of those things where you're like, wow, how did this all come together? This is a really good team. That feeling you must get from all of that. It's just tremendous, I'm sure.
Yeah, and there's an immediacy to it that I like, because I'm super impatient when I'm creating, and you know, I'll finish the script and then I'm like, okay, I'm like waiting for the pages to come back, and you know, he sends me every page as it's finished, and so I get that like steady drip of content to me, and I get to like reconsume the work by looking at the pages. And I'm like, oh god, this is cool, so, like every time. So it's awesome. Do you still want me to go back and talk about World Anvil? I don't want to forget about it, because you wanted me to elaborate on that, Travis.
Yeah, you should tell us more about this, because I think not just for yeah, us, but yeah, I mean we're definitely curious about it.
Tell us. Okay, so going back to D&D, World Anvil is something I discovered because my DM put it together, an account for her world that we do our campaigns in. It's basically, it's a world building software, but it's all browser based, and it's like a super powerful wiki, but, way easier to use. And it's created specifically for writers. It has all these different, categories, so you can put in, you know, different characters, races, cultures, locations, all that kind of stuff. You know, you have these templates, and then you fill in, and I'll have these questions with their history and everything. But you can also load in maps and make them interactive. So I've done that for Discordia. I have the maps of Odessa, the country of Alventi, and I've got little pins dropped on each spot where a short or a whole comic took place, so that we can keep track of all the geographic locations where our story has moved. And you have interactive timelines. Back
of zero is your map.
Yep. So
the map that was created with the Anvil?
I actually had that commissioned by a really awesome artist. He creates under Rolaris Maps. And so I've uploaded that into World Anvil. But then you can zoom in and scroll around the map and click on different things, and it'll take you to the articles for those countries and all that stuff. So it's actually a really cool, powerful program that's made for world building specifically. Writers use it, dungeon masters for D&D use it. And you can make your world public, so anybody looking through can find it, or you can make it private, which is how the Discordia one is. So that it's mostly for Patrick and I and other guest artists that we bring in to be able to share information so that they can read the more in-depth history and things that, you know, don't necessarily make it to the page. But because it's on an invite basis, I thought, gosh, that would be really cool for a Kickstarter reward for the like super fan people that really want to just like read about the world building. So we've had a couple people sign up for that, that are going to get an invite to that in a couple weeks and be able to kind of see the behind the scenes world building. So, I mean, it's not for every project, but it's definitely something worth checking out. They have a free level, but to make it like private, there's like some annual subscription fee that's really not too much. That I snagged just to have a little bit more functionality and to make it private. But yeah, I would definitely check it out. I'm going to probably make a second account for my fantasy world so that I can keep all my information for that straight, because with both of them, I've got like Google Docs and notebooks and all kinds of crap. And now I can put all that in this one program and look up articles and like have my own private wiki and, you know, flip through a timeline that actually looks like a real timeline instead of just me putting dates in a, you know, Google Doc. So yeah. I don't know. It's been a big help.
Awesome. Speaking of dates, just so that we stay on track for the listeners, that are interested in Discordia and the Kickstarter that's going on, you funded in 24 hours. So this started, 24 hours ago, or within this week. Mm-hmm. But how long does it run for?
Because we were doing a smaller project this time, it runs till the 29th. It was just a 10-day project, because our goal was only $1,000, because we're doing this limited run of this short. Next time when we do issue one, probably mid-March, I would think at this point, I want to get all these other rewards delivered first. We'll go back to another 30-day cycle just like normal. But this one was just supposed to be like just a real short project. And I don't know, it was very successful so far for the goal that I had set for it. So that's cool.
It's tremendous. I mean, just the fact that you're running a short project, a short time frame, and you funded within the time, that means you have rabid fans. You have people that are willing to just jump in and be there to support you on day one. That is awesome.
Yeah, I was really excited about that. With the Winter Special Kickstarter, I think we did roughly the same, like $1,200 in the first 24 hours. We didn't fully fund because we had a much higher goal. But it was cool because everyone had just gotten issue zero, you know, the week before we launched that Winter Special. And I was like, okay, I'm rolling the dice here because not everybody's had a chance to read it yet, probably, and not everybody's going to like it. Let's see what happens. And just about everybody came back, and then we got new fans, and I was just like, it was really cool. So
you're so close with tarot cards, I'm just saying.
Yeah, we hit the stretch goal for the sticker pack today. We're gonna do some tarot cards with Patrick's art and another $250, which I'm sure we'll hit, and then we'll do a enamel pin at $2,000. And if we fly past that, I don't know, I've got to come up with something else to keep people interested, I guess. I don't know.
$196 to the tarot cards.
Oh, all right. We're getting closer.
Yeah. I mean, I'm waiting for you to sell me on this because, I mean, you haven't got my money yet. So sell me a little more. I need to know more about the project.
Okay.
More about some of these goals and other things that we're trying to, or, you know, tell me a little bit more about what this Kickstarter has involved in it. And then how we can find it.
All right. So the short, it's like an 11-page story. So it's kind of like the shorts that were in issue zero. this was actually an idea for another short for that, but it wasn't quite ready at that time. And then I reworked it and made it much better. And now it's one of our coolest things we've done. The short's called A Bloody Business. It's about our main, like I said, our main character from the ongoing series. His name's Cole Fisher. He is a private investigator who gets put on a case to go find a missing person in Discordia. That's going to be the hook for the main series. But prior to that, the Kingdom of Alventi, which is the last country that hasn't basically been overrun by monsters and had society destroyed, is in the middle of Prohibition.
Oh.
And Cole was a bootlegger. Ex-soldier, bootlegger, then he becomes a private eye after Prohibition ends. So A Bloody Business takes place while they're running some whiskey from the distilleries in Discordia, like basically the you know, no man's land, into the kingdom. And it's not really a spoiler because the monster's on the cover, but they get attacked by a giant bat. and so they have to make it to safety, you know, while looking out for cops and, you know, just trying not to get eaten alive. So that's what this actual little short story is.
Okay.
But part of the Make 100 program is that you're limited to 100 rewards exactly. So it's a signed and numbered edition. We will re-release this short at some point down the road. I'll probably make extra copies available in this Kickstarter that won't be numbered. But anybody that's a main backer at a physical reward level for this one will get a numbered edition out of 100. Mm-hmm. And then you'll get all of the stretch goal rewards. So the stickers, which we've unlocked, I'm sure we'll get to the tarot cards and the pin. You also get an invite to our Discord. So we're trying to build a little fan community because there are enough people interested in this world. And something just kind of...
Discordia Discord.
Yes, the Discordia Discord. And I'm trying to come up with a cool idea like you guys have for the Starlight fans. So I'm maybe Discordians. I don't know. I'm just... we'll see. We'll
see. Discordians. Like, Discordians, all I imagine is people going... burr, 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 when they walk, you know. Discordians are coming... burr, 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 burr.
Oh, and the last thing every reward tier gets is you get a we're sharing with you a private Spotify playlist, which is like all the music that we work to and inspires us for this. So there's going to be some cool like Irish stuff in there and some, you know, more maybe some protesty music that kind of informs some of the politics of the universe. And I don't know. There's some cool stuff. We came up with that idea because I write a lot to music, and I often have like a song that maybe informs a work, and I'll think to myself, okay, if I was to pick one song that summed up this book, it would be this one. And it's for this short specifically, I shared with Patrick, I said, okay, imagine the final panel, which I'm not going to spoil. Okay. And if it was a movie, this song would play and we would go to credits, and it's In Hell I'll Be in Good Company by the Dead South. And I sent that to him. He had never heard it before. And he's like, this song is banging. This is incredible. And then he was like, maybe we should do a Spotify playlist. And that's where that idea came from. So I don't know, kind of a cool organic way that we came up with that. So I don't know. That was just kind of a fun, this is like the fan campaign. You get to be part of the community with this campaign. So that's kind of what we were going for.
You're reeling me in. I mean, if you have sea shanties in here, because sea shanties are hot right now. I mean, it's all around the TikToks. So, I mean, if you got that, then I'm sold.
No. There's probably going to be. It depends on whether or not you consider it a sea shanty. Johnny, I Hardly Knew Ya, the Dropkick Murphys version is going to be on there.
I'll allow it.
Okay.
I'll
allow it. Okay. That's pretty cool.
I do not get the sea shanty thing. That actually makes me old now and no longer hip and cool with the youths.
TikTok, Travis.
The sea shanty thing is so funny too, because I just started playing Sea of Thieves, so I've been like in this like crazy pirate mood, and then all of Twitter is all about sea shanties, and I was like, "Are you guys like wiretapping me or like?"
Wait, they are. You say you're playing Sea of Thieves.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think we talked about it on Facebook. You were shocked that anybody still played that game.
Someone else just told me that. I was like, Is that still a thing?
Yeah, I just got into it, so it's I don't know. It's it's awesome.
What's funny is I had another friend, the friend that I was talking to prior to the podcast, was trying to get me to play that with them last week, and I was like, I don't have it. So maybe I need to get on this. Oh man.
Yeah, maybe.
Sea shanties, and now I need to get to Sea of Thieves. Oh.
Screw Cyberpunk 2077. It's Sea of Thieves time.
That's right.
Yeah.
Fire it up.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a blast. I like the the emergent gameplay. And speaking of narrative, you kind of make your own narrative with this game because it's so open ended. And I don't know. I really like that. I dig it. Check it out.
You're reeling me in.
You can sail with me any day.
All right. Cool. I'm liking it. Travis, get us back on track. Where are we going?
I forgot where we were. I'm checking the what am I supposed to? What's Travis supposed to be doing now? List so he doesn't forget his job.
Usually it's me. We flip roles this time.
You gotta get an address for your project.
Yes. So if you go to DiscordiaComic.net/KS, that will always route you to the newest active Kickstarter for Discordia. So DiscordiaComic.net/KS is where you need to go.
Right. And then I gotta tell you, Chris, I have my, so I was just telling I was telling Greg before this started, my house is just being torn apart. I'm getting ready to sell this house.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I remember getting Zero with the variant cover. And so I've been looking for it all day, and then I found it. So
good.
Variant Zero.
Winner.
Good.
I love the variant cover, by the way. It is absolutely ominous.
Oh, which one did you get?
I have the worm head with the multi-worm heads.
Okay, so that's like the Christian Dabari one.
Is that, I can't remember.
Yeah, that's cover. Jasper. Yep.
It is absolutely disturbing.
That's awesome. Yeah.
So that's a good thing. And we got the address. All right. It's time to start talking about your favorite story that inspired you to become a creator.
All right. Is this Cat in the Hat time, Greg?
Yes. Tell us all about Cat in the Hat. That's what we talked about. All on the Facebook.
Wait. There's only one way I'm going to let Cat in the Hat be someone's inspiration. And that is if they can say the writer's name correctly. Otherwise, you don't get to choose a Cat in the Hat as your inspiration.
Okay, so Seuss is not correct?
No.
Nope. And what was your other most
All right. So after agonizing about this for hours and hours, I decided that the most like all-encompassing influence on my work is probably Hellboy. But specifically, I thought we should talk about Hellboy in Hell, since that is like the ultimate Hellboy story and like just the culmination of 20 plus years of storytelling that was just done in such a beautiful way that I will think about that every time I write something, and definitely a huge influence. So Hellboy in Hell.
The whole thing?
The whole thing. Well, Hellboy in Hell is, 12 issues. So that's not huge. We'll talk about the whole Hellboy, 20 years worth of comics. All right, where do we start?
That's a lot of story.
That's a lot of story. How much time do we have?
So Hellboy in Hell.
All right. Well, do you want me to just give you the rundown on what it's about?
Give us the rundown. Tell us.
All right.
Tell us like we'd never heard it before.
Okay. So Hellboy in Hell is like the final story arc for the character Hellboy after, like I said, 20 plus years of story. Spoiler alert, Hellboy dies and he gets pulled down to hell. It's kind of in his name. He ends up in hell and goes on this, not to overuse this term since I talked about Discordia this way, influence. He kind of goes on this twisted odyssey where he travels through hell to various regions, and every issue interacts with like some different character. It does have an overarching narrative through the 12 issues, but it is very much almost a monster of the week as he just goes through one weird situation to another. And in classic Hellboy fashion, he sees something crazy weird and he just usually is like, oh crap. Or, you know, that was weird, after, you know, he has a conversation with somebody and then they turn into a skeleton and dissolve into dust. And he just kind of brushes it off and walks away because he's seen so much crazy stuff. He runs into several demons in hell, of course, and ends up having to battle them because everybody is trying to get him to fulfill his destiny his whole life, that he's going to lead the armies of hell and conquer the world. And he's never wanted anything to do with that. And now he's actually in hell where he's supposed to take over, and he wants nothing to do with it still. He runs into his uncle, who has been trying to poison his mind since he was a child. He runs into his wife from when he got drunk and married in Mexico. He runs into Edward Gray, which is another major character from the Hellboy universe. He runs into Satan himself, and their run-in's a little more gruesome than everybody else. And basically, like I said, each issue, he kind of has just like a different weird storyline. Like one guy is trying to get his soul back because he made a deal with a demon and Hellboy's got to help him. He runs into lots of characters that he met in life that are now dead, and kind of just travels through some of the very strange geography of hell. He has a fight with a vampire that he killed before in life. He watches a creepy puppet show. It all sounds very disjointed and weird, but it has this very dreamlike quality. And Mignola's art in it had by that point gotten like even more abstract, and it really fits. And by the end, do we go full spoiler? Do you want me to walk through?
I remember the ending, so I think you should avoid it, but it is probably, in my opinion, the best narrative out of all the, I think, 10 issues or whatever it was.
Yeah. I would say if people haven't read this already, then they should have.
Yeah. Yeah. What are you doing?
You already spoiled it by saying that he went to hell.
Chris puts his main monster on his cover. Then we talk about Hellboy in Hell, where he goes to hell and it's in the title. Are we just Star Trek Beyonding this whole thing or what?
Oh, I think we are.
I'm done.
I'm packing up the podcast. We're out.
Yeah. Then Hellboy turns out to be Khan.
Oh, my gosh.
Even though Mike said that that's not who he was, he lied.
The trouble with the spoiler on the end one is really that last issue goes back to what Chris and I were just talking, and Greg, you too, but what Chris and I were talking about, where the medium of comic books is explored thoroughly in that last issue.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just so Chris, you don't have to give spoilers, but you can if you want. I'll back out now. But it's such a fun, from a writer's perspective, that's a comic book writer's comic.
Yeah, I
had to show up.
Right. I won't spoil it, but Hellboy finally has a reckoning with his destiny. There's more to the story that happens after Hellboy in Hell. The BPRD series continued for a while. And there's finally a definite ending to the whole giant universe in that series. But Hellboy in Hell very much is like the capstone of the Hellboy series itself. That's why he brings back all these elements from all his previous adventures. And the dreamlike quality of it, it like perfectly sums up the way Mike's writing is. And what really inspires me about that, like, yes, obviously Mike Mignola is a comic book artist, and that is what he is known for. He's a big inspiration to a lot of people art-wise. He's been an inspiration to Patrick art-wise. But I love his art. He's one of my favorite comic book artists. You know, I mean, that almost goes without saying, but I love Mike's writing, and the way that he world builds and the way that he writes has been such a big influence on my writing in comics and in my novels. He isn't afraid to like throw you in the deep end and say, you know, this is just a day in the life of this character, but they live in a much larger world and they've already seen some shit by the time you, the reader, are jumping in. And I love that. Like, he'll have some reference. A character will say something and there will always be like a little asterisk. And then down in a, you know, a text box at the bottom of the page, it'll say, you know, go back and read Hellboy Conqueror Worm. Or this is a reference to some like weird occult manuscript from the 1800s that, you know, may or may not be made up. It could be made up in like an in-universe thing. And Mike is just like putting a footnote. Or sometimes it's a reference to a real thing because he intertwines so much real world mythology and his spin on it. And I love that from a world building perspective. Obviously we're doing that with Discordia, with how big the world is and all the history and everything. And you see all these little pockets of things. But I do that in my, my fantasy writing too. I try to have like references to different events and characters that then I go back and flesh out with a short story, like some historical character. And then I go back to the ebook and amend it and put a footnote and you click on it and it takes you to a link to buy that other story. Because I was just thinking, okay, here's the like the digital equivalent of what Mike is doing in Hellboy when he has that footnote that says, go back and read Conqueror Worm. You know, if I've got it on my shelf, great. I can go refer to it, or you got to go to your comic shop and buy it.
Yeah.
But with like my ebooks and stuff, I can just have the link and it takes you to that other Amazon page. And then you're like, oh man, well, I want to know more about this character that they're, they're tossing back some beers and talking about this guy that they remember. And now I can read about him. And I really, really like the way he does that. He's not afraid to, you know, really follow like that Hemingway iceberg type writing where you show so much less than you have. And he's not afraid to get weird. Hellboy in Hell is possibly one of the weirdest Hellboy stories. And that's why it's so good. Because he's not trying to like fit in this preconception of what a horror book should be. Because Hellboy is supposed to be like a horror series, but it has these like dark fantasy elements and it has these comedic elements. And it just has this like weird acid trip stuff going on sometimes. That's like just off the wall strange. And it's super immersive because of that, because it feels very distinctly him. Like, it's not like Mike is writing this to market. He's not writing this for a specific person other than himself. And that's why it's so enjoyable. And that on a variety of levels has really like influenced me. Like, you should always write for yourself first, and then people will like it because of that, because they can feel that, you know, that energy in it. And I feel like when you're reading Hellboy, you can really tell that this is his passion. And I don't know, that's something huge that I've always taken out of that. So when I've been a Hellboy fan for a long time. Like, I love the movies with Ron Perlman. I love the comics. And then,
sorry, I did not leave it with Ron Perlman.
Yes. Sorry. Huge disappointment. Patrick and I had a bet going about whether it would suck or not. And I was the optimist and he was the pessimist and he won. So anyway, the less we speak of that, the better.
So you're not going to cover it in the next 15 minutes?
You're out again. The Cat in the Hat movie, though, very, very good absurdist film.
I have very good Hellboy. Stop. No, he didn't say the name right. Greg, you back down. I have questions.
I'm sorry.
I will come after Mike any day of the week in his writing. About to get a lot of haters.
You don't like Mike's writing?
Travis is about to pull out Narrative Gunslinger guns.
finger guns. Here we go.
I'm gonna make people probably not appreciate me as much after this. And the worst part about it is that I am just as guilty of the things I'm going to call out. And he's more successful than me, so he's obviously doing these things better.
All right. So, quick shot round. Let's do it.
Well, so here's the thing. I need to be honest here. First, the book started with a napkin drawing. So I don't think when he started the series out, it was as passion project like you described. I don't like the original Hellboy run. I actually, from my perspective, and I'm going to put this out, Guillermo, if I'm saying his name correctly, because I say all names wrong, except for one, and it starts with Doctor. Anyways, I think his influence is huge on Mike by the time he gets to Hellboy in Hell. And I think I'm glad you chose that specific run, because that is by far his best writing that he's ever done. And that's because he's writing to the medium and his art perfectly. I mean, he is nailing it out of the park. But in general, 100%
agree.
I just don't think the first run of Hellboy, so people don't remember this. I worked in a comic book store when Hellboy came out. And what people are kind of main, Hellboy is the last man standing of a weird golden age of unusual meta paranoia. You know what I'm saying? Mib came out around the same time. One that was forgotten was called Urban Tales, came out around the same time. Wait, Mib might have been part of the Urban Tales. I can't remember. So there was a whole era around that time that Hellboy came out of comics, especially from Dark Horses or anything from Kitchen Sink Press, that was very Hellboyish like. And so Hellboy, in my opinion, at that time was a derivative of that era, the Crow, you know, the darkness, the brooding 90s, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I can never get behind Hellboy. I tried to read it so much. So when I picked up Hellboy Goes to Hell, or Hellboy in Hell, or whatever, I will say that's his best writing, so I can't knock it very much, because I actually really love how it ended. But you come back to BPRD, I couldn't finish it. It was right back to the old Hellboy for me, and I'm sorry.
Well, but he's not the primary writer on BPRD. He's just the idea guy. So,
to be fair. But yeah, that was it. I don't really have anything to take apart for you.
What, Travis? I was waiting for the guns to go kapow, kapow, kapow.
Mike, he doesn't write a lot. And it's his art that really is beautiful. And he's able to create narrative in his art. So it's very challenging when you're a writer to critique someone who tells their story through art directly.
Yeah.
You know,
that's totally fair.
In issue 10, going back to that.
Huh? Oh no, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say issue 10 is the ultimate example of that. He has full control of that narrative through visual storytelling. That's just, it's beyond my skill. You know, like I would have to, you know, that's where Greg and I get lucky with our artists, both of us, you know, with Zach and Brett, where they're able to do things with visual storytelling that we can't even conceive to help build our narratives better. And he is brilliant at both. I hope that someday he does a series again without Hellboy that is a leap for him, a challenge, you know, like I tell writers when I go to writing groups and stuff, you know, write your taboos, write things that you couldn't challenge, write a rom-com because it's fucking terrible. But if you can do it, you'll be a better writer for it, you know?
Absolutely.
I hope he gets to another run because that Hellboy showed me the series you specifically, the Hellboy Goes to Hell, shows me he's got it in him, but I just never seen it before or after. I mean, I know he did some other books, but they're just, they're okay.
Yeah. And I think, the first couple mini series of Hellboy was way too wordy. I mean, it had way too many text boxes, which is like a pet peeve of mine. And I think John Byrne helped him script Seed of Destruction. So just to be in Mike's corner, I think he was getting his feet under him, and that wasn't all him in the beginning. And as he slowly leaned more into less actual like dialogue and, you know, interior monologue and stuff, and more of how do I tell the story with my art is when the series got a lot better for me. He didn't do the primary writing on it, but I think Christopher Golden did. But like, that's why I really like Baltimore. I don't know how you felt about Baltimore, but I thought Baltimore was pretty kick-ass, and I it kind of shook off some of the cobwebs from the earlier Hellboy formula. But no, I think those are valid criticisms. I think where his passion for it came in was after the little beginning, after the napkin drawing, when he started to work in the different real world mythologies and some of the weird little almost kitchen sinky stuff that he throws at Hellboy, because it's just like, this is a weird creature that I read about somewhere that I think has got a cool design, or this is a cool myth that I heard about once while I was, you know, visiting Ireland or something. And he kind of just throws those in because they're cool to him. And I think that that works and synthesizes in a cool way for me as a reader. But I could understand why. I mean, obviously his mastery is with his artwork. And that is why I picked Hellboy and Hell, because that's where the fusion of those two things is like actual perfection finally. So I don't think you're wrong. I just don't like that you said it. Yeah,
I'm over here team Chris. I mean, like, you couldn't have picked a better piece to talk about or that inspired you, and I actually like the BPRD run, so
you like the BPRD run?
I did. I actually have it in my boxes because, like, I'm that guy. But
there's so many cool characters that come in and out of BPRD. Like, yeah. Really, I don't know.
I think that's what drives it for me sometimes, at least in those stories. And I mean, I know that he just had a slight hand in some of that stuff, but it was just like, you get a little sampling of things. I like a stable shoestring, you know. I like Lunchables. That's
what, yeah, 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 yeah. You like the sample platter, and that's, you liked issue zero of Discordia because that's kind of what it was.
That's the truth. That's what it, I mean. When it comes back around to things, that's what I like. I like a little bit of this, a little bit of that, because it gives you an idea of what you're getting into, and then you can take the things you like and leave the things you don't, and then carry on with the rest of it. And that's
absolutely,
for me, the experience.
Well, Travis, I think you should, I'm not necessarily going to say to read the whole end of BPRD. The last arc, Devil, You Know, has a lot of problems. It was written by Scott Alley, which obviously there's a lot of baggage there because he's a sexual abuser, so that's a whole other thing. But the last issue switches from Scott writing, and I can't remember who the artist was, which makes me feel really horrible, but it actually switches to Mike writing and Mike's art for the last like 12 pages of his universe, and it is all visual storytelling, and it is like so perfect that it's almost worth just going in on like darkhorse.com and buying a digital copy of issue 15 of BPRD Devil, You Know, and just flip to the last like 13 pages when Mike takes over, just to see how the whole meta story ends. And his artwork is really, really killer in that sequence too. So I don't know, maybe that's worth the $2.99 or whatever a digital issue is.
Yeah, no problem doing that. I do like that stuff. Let me ask you another real quick question that's been bothering me. In your opinion, is the Shape of Water in the Hellboy universe?
Yes, right?
I'm just a fish.
Yeah, well, what? Wasn't that like Guillermo? Like, I mean, he made that when he couldn't make Hellboy 3. So I feel like that was his way of being like, okay, well, I'm just going to take Abe Sapien and change enough that you can't sue me, and I'm still going to make a fucking movie in this world. I don't know. It does feel like
your movie bombs, bitches.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's a rom-com. I tell you, write the thing you fear the most. Write a rom-com.
It's a beautiful story. Abe Sapien is beautiful in it. I mean, That's what I felt it was, but I mean, you know.
Yeah. What do you think, Chris? You know, is it in the universe? Is it canon?
Well, it's definitely not canon, but you could pretend. It's headcanon for sure.
We're taking it. Yeah. We're putting that down, Travis. Well,
if that's true, then I'd like to offer that Paddington Bear 2 is also canon.
Okay.
Ooh, explain.
Yeah. Well, so me and my friend, we went and saw Shape of Water with no idea what we were seeing because we were kind of out of whack because a job I was doing kind of kept me away from social media and stuff because that was part of the deal. So we went and saw Shape of Water with no clue what we were going to go see. It was just the only thing playing at the cinema that we hadn't seen. And we saw it and we were like, holy crap. That made me uncomfortable. She fucked a fish and I loved it. Like we were just like, we were laughing when we left because we loved it because it made us, because good art should move emotion, right? It should create something in you. Even if it's an uncomfortable emotion, that's what good art is. You know, there needs to be something that happens. And so we were super happy. We super loved it. And the very next day, so this is the year of remember the, what was that card that we all had memberships for that would just let you go to the movies as much as you want? Remember that?
Oh, yeah. The movie pass, or what was it called? Something like that.
Movie pass, right?
Yeah.
And so the very next day, we're like, well, let's go see Paddington because that's the only thing playing in the cinema that we haven't seen. So we go see Paddington with our other friend. So now it's us two again and our other friend who's sitting between us. And the woman from The Shape of Water is the mom from Paddington Bear.
That's awesome. So
wait, it gets better. We're laughing and we keep saying, she fucked a fish to each other in the cinema with our friend between us who's freaking out because there's kids in the cinema. She's afraid that they can hear us. And she's like, shut up. And like, I made a joke. I said, what if at the end she has to jump into the water and save Paddington? Just like in the movie last night. And my friend's like, that would be awful, Travis. Don't wish that. Guess how Paddington 2 ends? Over, and she comes out of the water wet, and I looked over at my friend and I said, she fucked a bear. I lost it in the theater, dude. Our other friend like stormed out of the theater. She was so mad. She was like, you're killing this movie for these children.
That's awesome. See, I always thought Paddington was in the It universe because he has that the yellow raincoat, I think, in the trailer, if I remember right. Or is his raincoat a different color? I don't know.
Hey, we've just connected the It universe all the way back to Hellboy.
Yes.
Yeah. Through Paddington Bear.
Wow.
And fish fucking.
Wow.
Hey.
This is a podcast for kids.
Right. And then that kind of goes back to D&D because I had a character that, you know, lost his virginity to whatever their fish race is called, and I still haven't been able to live that down in my friend group. So,
oh,
yep,
awkward.
Yeah,
yeah. Oh, wow.
All right, yeah. We should. Greg, lead the wrap up. I've talked enough.
All right, we're in the final countdown, my friends. We are wrapping this thing up. We are gonna hit those final reminders. Why don't you, Chris, tell us everything we need to know about Discordia so the listeners know where to find it again and what they're looking for.
And when it ends.
Yes. So the current campaign ends on January 29th. You can find that at discordiacomic.net/KS. Obviously, discordiacomic.net is our main Discordia website where you can get updates, look at the cover galleries, find out more about the series. You can also check out darktidingspress.com for all of my other writing, and that will have links to Discordia as well. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook at Discordia Comic and at Dark Tidings usually.
So discordia.net?
Discordiacomic.net.
Oh, comic.net. Okay. Cool, because I was wondering why you left your Apache default page up.
Nope. Yeah.
I was like, huh.
Weird. Fix that before this goes live.
Yeah.
Because we've done that before, Travis, haven't we? Never.
What? Huh? Huh?
What? Never.
Yeah. Never.
Boy, I'm screwing this up, Travis.
It's okay. I screw it up every time we do a show.
No, but I don't do the final wrap up, so I don't know how to do the.
Oh,
final
really? Wrap-up. I do it. I forgot.
Yeah.
I also forgot how to do other things. All right, Chris. So we got the address. We know where to get it. We know the comic. Any parting words for our audience about the comic before you go?
If you like The Shape of Water, there will be fish people in the comics, so there may be fish fucking sometime in the future.
I'm buying it.
Now I'm sold.
There you go. I just set the hook. Like if you were a fish person.
Set the hook.
Oh my God.
Double entendre. I want to get sea shanties are a must now. And I'm going to get that pirate game. Oh, dude, speaking my language.
Old Greg, you need to stop.
Old Greg, no.
Yes.
All right, you win.
I think that's everything. So thanks, everybody, for joining us for another Narrative Gunslingers. And I'm going to do an outro for the first time. Thank you.
What was that? I'm going to do an outro for the first time. Thank you.
I was like waiting for an outro to play or something, and I was like, okay, don't talk. Oh, that's awesome. Well, thank you for having me on, guys. This was a blast.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you so much.
Yeah. I'm hoping that maybe by next year things are settled down and we can have conventions again and we can all actually get together and hang out for real.
Hey, Gunslingers. Narrative Gunslingers is recorded, edited, and hosted by Travis Webb and Greg Smith. Produced by John Horsley. And found where all good things are found at, The Spoilerverse. Follow us along at our IG, Twitter, and Facebook handles, Narrative Gunslingers. Thanks a lot, Gunslingers. We'll see you next time.